Honor is sometimes a challenge in family because of the patterns which develop. In this session, Scott and Joanne give you a plan for identifying those patterns and ideas for changing them. When you implement those ideas, honor will come easier in your family and relationships will grow closer together.
I'm excited about this particular session that we're going to do tonight because we're going to show you how to implement a lot of the stuff we've already talked about, how to infuse honor into your family. Now, one of the handouts we've given you talks about 10 traits of a successful family. When people look at that, they experience various emotions. Some are pretty encouraged because they look at how they're doing well in a number of areas. Others are discouraged because they see how far they yet have to go. Others look at that and they say, I'm not exactly sure where to start. This study came from some work we did combining several studies that have been done out there on the successful family, and then we've incorporated them into 10 traits that we believe are traits of successful families.
We're not going to talk about those 10 traits tonight. In fact, we hope that it's a basis for another book that we'll write someday on the successful family, and we'll talk about those 10 things. But we give that to you tonight just so you can take a look at it and think about that as you evaluate your own family. And maybe you'll take those 10 things and make them goals in your family life, because we believe that if you put those 10 things into practice in your family, that your family will grow closer together and your relationships will improve. So that's why we give you that handout. Tonight, what we're going to do is share a tool with you. And this tool can be helpful in implementing those 10 things, making some changes in your family. We call the tool the network factor. And that's just a title that we've made up to name something that we see in families. As we watch families and we work with families, we have identified this pattern that happens, and we call it the network factor. The network factor is a combination of relating habits which dictate what's expected in family interaction.
The combination of relating habits which dictate what's expected in family interaction. The network factor is a powerful force which is working behind the scenes in every family. It dictates how we're going to solve problems in a family, how we're going to deal with emotions, how we're going to deal with conflict, how we're going to relax together. But it's hidden. It's behind the scenes. And what we're going to do is bring it out to the forefront so that we can manipulate it and work on it. Every person has habits of relating. You as parents have habits of relating. Whether you internalize your anger or you express it. Whether you're dominant or whether you're passive. Whether you're emotional or whether you're not, where you tend to hide your emotions. We all have these relating patterns. And those relating patterns become cues and triggers to others in the family. So they look at those and they know what to expect because mom is that way or dad is that way. And they know what to expect out of mom or dad. And then children develop they take off on those cues or triggers and they develop responses, which then again become cues and triggers to other people in the family. Let me give you some examples. Mom gives an instruction and the child argues. In fact, every time mom gives an instruction, the child argues. They've developed a relating habit in the way that they interact. Dad says, it's time to get in the car. Two children hear the word car and they think front seat. And they race. And all dad has to say is, let's get in the car. And man, they go as fast as they can to beat the other one to get to the front seat of the car. Two children are bickering and one says, mom, you know, how they draw mom in, and that becomes mom's cue to get involved in their situation. So those are examples of the network factor. Interestingly enough, it all happens kind of behind the scenes. We don't really see it going on. And now what we're going to try to do with you this evening is pull it out to the front so you can see it a little more clearly.
So in a family, dad relates to Jack, his son, differently than mom relates to Jack. In turn, Jack relates to his dad differently than he relates to mom. There are habits and patterns that develop in those relationships, some good, some bad, but they form as families grow and develop. So Jack may go to dad if he wants to share some personal information, but if he wants permission for something, something, he may go to mom. He may feel closer to dad, but there's some issues that he only talks to mom about. There are patterns that just happen in our relationships as we grow. Now, dad may relate to Jack in one way, but he relates to the other son, Bill, in a different way, because those are the patterns that have developed in our relationships. That's the network factor.
This toy is a great illustration of the network factor. Ideally, if you were going to compare this to a family, you'd have the same number of balls as you have members in your family or people that live in your house. And then the strings would each, there'd be one string attaching each ball to every other ball, representing the relationships that exist in the family. Now, I like this little toy because whenever you move one ball, everybody else then has to adjust and move. That's what the network factor does. What we're trying to do in family life is we take these relationships, these strings, we take them apart, and then we look for ways to build honor into the family dynamic. So we look at ways that the family has become dishonoring in the relationship between this person and this person, or this person and this person, and we try to analyze that, take it apart, and look for ways to infuse honor into that particular relationship.
As you work on honor in your family, what you want to do is look at each one of those relationships and build strong bonds of honor so that actually over time what will happen is that dishonor will be repelled by your family. The bonds between each person are held together with honor, and that becomes part of your network factor. So sarcasm or hurtful joking, some dishonoring things are actually repelled by the family because of the network factor.
Now, we want you to help us illustrate this. So I'm going to break our group up into four different parts, and I'm going to read a story in just a minute, and the story contains cues. When I say a particular cue, your group is going to respond. When I say, your group is the first group, and when I say, I want you to, then I want you to respond this way. Practice that. Yeah, you got to do this little thing with your chin, you know, that's part of it. Good. Try that again. I want you to. No, not the eyes. If you're doing the eyes, then you must be playing this game somewhere else. Okay? You got to go. Okay, let's do one more time. I want you to. Oh, very good. Now, this is the second group. If ever I say the word bed, bath, clean, or work, then you go, Ready? Bath. Oh, you guys are good. I want you to. Oh, very good. Hey, come on now. You got to get the right cues here. All right. Now, in this game we're going to play, actually when I read the story, there's really no word bed and bath in the story, only clean and work. But I threw bed and bath in there because that's the way your children like to play it, so you can practice that way. Now, you're the third group. Whenever I say no, you're going to say, but dad. Oh, it has to be that high voice now, the whiny voice. But dad. You ready? No.
But dad.
Oh, you guys are good. All right. Now, this group, whenever I say now, you say, not yet. Now.
Not yet.
Oh, very good. Okay, let's practice it. Okay, we're going to practice now. I want you to. Bath.
No.
But
dad.
Now.
Not yet.
Oh, good. You guys are good. Okay, here we go. Are you ready? It's Saturday. Everyone knew that this would be a Saturday to work.
Aww.
In the yard. Dad had some extra time, so he started to trim some bushes. He had been outside for about an hour and decided it was time to have his two children, Carl, age 10, and Karen, age 12, join him. Carl, come on outside, please. Yes, Carl said, looking out the window. I want you to help me in the yard. Very good. Carl was having a difficult time getting himself going this morning. He liked to get involved in projects and often had a hard time switching to something when asked. Carl, we've got a lot of things to clean up.
Aww.
I want you to come outside. We can get a lot of work done today.
Aww.
Carl turned away from the window and then turned back and said, could I play on the computer a little longer? His dad looked up at him and said, no.
But dad.
We're going to do this work.
Aww.
Now.
Not yet.
Where Where's the broom? Carl asked. Well, check in the shed and see if you can find it. Couldn't you get it for me, Dad? I'm trying to tie my shoe. No. I want you to go find it. Just then, Karen came home from her friend's house. What are you guys doing? She asked. Today is the day we're going to get some things done around here. We could use your help. I want you to rake those leaves. Could I sweep instead, Dad? No. Look, you guys, after we get all done, we're going to play and have some fun together. But now, I want you to work. Let's not have any more complaining. We're going to work for a while. I want you to do it now.
Not yet.
Don't you feel like you're playing that game at home sometimes? You know, what's really amazing is that children pick up the cue so quickly, and each one of you only had to listen for one thing. Our kids listen for all those things at once, and then they just had to respond. It's really amazing. What we're going to do tonight is talk about the network factor. And when we focus on the network factor, we're going to take these hidden patterns, triggers, and cues that go on under the surface and bring them up above the surface so we can look at them and talk about them. Because once you recognize those patterns and you talk about them, then you can adjust them and make some changes. Now, I want you to do another little project for us. Take out your handout. And I'm going to make circles, small circles, for every person who lives in your home. And we're going to arrange those circles in a circle. So if you've got mom and dad, however many people are living in your home, Sue, Billy, Mark, and then write the person's first name in the circle.
I have a question.
Yes?
I have a stepdaughter who comes to visit.
Okay, if they're in your home most of the time or at least half the time, put them in. You might have two different pictures, but the people who are living in your home or in that home environment relating. If there's no dad, then don't put a circle for dad, but if grandma lives with you, then put a circle for grandma. So there's a circle for everyone who's in the family. Then I want you to draw a line from one person, from one circle to each of the other circles. Those lines represent relationships. Dad has a relationship with each one of those other people. I'm going to connect all the circles in that way, so every circle has a line to every other circle. All the circles are connected. Now, ideally, there'd be two lines between each circle because mom has a relationship with Mark and Mark has a relationship with mom that's different. But just to make the picture look nice, we'll just do one line between each one. But realize those are all the different relationships that are going on in your family.
Now, once you've drawn all of the different relationships and lines between all of them, then you're going to have a diagram which represents all the relationships in your household. One of the fascinating things about this study, which we're not going to be able to deal with tonight, is to deal with families where divorce has created a network over here and a network over here where the children go back and forth between them. Or when, as this lady was asking, you've got a daughter who comes in and out of the family based on visiting or whatever it might be. That complicates the network factor. We would love to do a presentation sometime, a whole class dealing with single families or blended families or reconstructed families to try to address some of the specific issues that they deal with. But let's just deal with this on a basic form first, and then you can try to make the application and the jump later. Once you've drawn the diagram, you want to ask five questions about each of the relationships, each one of these lines. And each of these questions form an acrostic, all of them, which spell the word peace. The first question we're going to ask is, how do this relationship, do they problem solve? Does one overpower the other? Does the other just give in? How do they problem solve together? The second question has to do with emotions. What kind of emotions do they share? Is it only anger, or do they share other emotions as well? Are there some emotions that are never shared in this relationship? Maybe dad shares relationships that mom never shares, and so on, with Bill, their son. The next one has to do with arguments. How are arguments handled in the relationship? Do they talk it out? Does one try to talk and the other not? How this is helpful when dealing not just with a parent and a child, but how do Billy and Sue handle the way they relate with arguments? The next one has to do with conversation. What do they talk about? What kinds of things don't they talk about? And so conversation is one of the things we're going to ask about the relationship. Even this works when you're talking about the relationship between mom and dad. There may be some things that mom and dad don't talk about because it knows it gets them into a fight. The last E has to do with enjoyment. What's the level of enjoyment in this relationship? Now, we can take a look at this and make a lot of observations, but what we've done, if you will take some time and look at every one of the relationships and ask these five questions, you will have just identified a host of patterns in your family. One of the things you may find is that Sue, because she has attention deficit disorder, for example, she dominates the whole family. And in fact, when Sue's not there at dinner, life is very much different than when Sue is present. Not necessarily bad or good, but it's just Sue has a dramatic influence on the family life. You may find that when Dad isn't there, the dynamic is different, or mom isn't there, it's different, because each person adds to the network factor. What you've done by answering these questions about all the relationships is you've got pages now of material, especially if you have a lot of people in your family, because you're talking about lots of different relationships. And once you have that material, you can start looking for dishonoring strands. There may be a problem which we'll represent here with a squiggly line between the relationship between Bill and Sue. We'll call that conflict. And when I see that, then I know that that's an area we need to work on. And we're going to talk about those kinds of things this evening. We call this all the network factor. It's a great tool to use to bring relationships to the surface, to analyze them so you know where to work and how to develop honor in your family.
As families begin to ask these kinds of questions about the individual relationships in the family, they begin to see patterns then. In one family, the 9-year-old boy, they realized, only brought problems to mom. If he had a problem, he always went to mom. If mom wasn't home and dad was the only one home, he held on to that problem until mom got home, and then he'd take his problem to mom. That was a pattern that he had developed. In another family, they realized that problems were always solved with a loud voice. It was as if someone sensed a problem, the solution was to turn up the volume. That was a pattern they all shared in that family. Another family, they said, in contrast to that, that in their family, when there was conflict, everyone got quiet, went back to their part of the house, and there was quiet in the house. These are patterns that we develop. They're going to be different from one family to the next, but they're individual patterns and family patterns that we begin to see in a family. Now, think about the family that you grew up in for a few minutes. What were some of the ways that your family handled conflict? What was the pattern or the habit in your family when there was conflict? Let's just share a few of those. Yes?
Conflict wasn't permitted in my house. Everyone went into their own room and closed the door.
Okay, everybody went to their own room and closed the door. It was avoiding the conflict. Okay? Yes?
Yelling match.
A yelling match. Yes?
My dad blew his pop.
Mm-hmm. Dad got angry, and that's how conflict led to that. Uh-huh.
Belittling.
Yes.
Okay, the patterns develop. Yes.
Yeah,
but there's patterns. As you think about it, you can answer that question because it was predictable. You knew what was going to happen. If there was conflict, that's what's going to happen. That's what we're talking about. There's predictable patterns in family life. Often the network factor can be seen when we look at children. Sibling conflict often looks the same day after day after day. Children fall into patterns. They respond back and forth, almost the same words probably. That's the pattern, the habits they have. That's the network factor.
It's important to understand this whole idea of the network factor, because honor is a network factor issue. What we're trying to do is take these relationship strands and build honor into the family. So the network factor becomes an excellent tool for understanding the family and helping to develop the honor. When we're counseling families and trying to deal with honor in a particular issue in their family, this kind of an exercise is very helpful for us, because we then can find out where the problems are. We can then take apart these different honoring strands and develop them. It's fascinating to see how much network factor material is in the Bible. That's why on the sheets that we gave you, one of the traits of successful families is that that of spirituality and open spirituality. Faith and spirituality are very valuable in family life because the scriptures are full of all kinds of ways that we honor each other or develop network factor issues. Love one another, honor your parents, and so on.
As you begin to understand the network factor, then you can look for patterns in your family and address problems as they come up in patterns. In one family, mom realized that there was a lot of complaining. Things were being shared that was often negative information about another person. And so she shared that information with the dad, and they talked about it, and they said, yeah, that must be a problem here. And so before they shared that information with the children, they just spent a few days watching, looking for the patterns. What's going on here? What are the triggers? What are the cues? Who's responding? Who's initiating? What's happening here over and over again? What are the patterns? Once they identified some clear patterns, then they sat down and had a family meeting with the children, and they shared what they had seen with the children and said, you know, often we see when children get irritated, they begin picking on others, complaining about them, using mean words, being unkind with their mouth in one way or another. And we've seen that as a pattern, and we believe it's pulling our family apart, and we don't like that. So we want to change the patterns in our family, and this is what we're going to do to change. Whenever we hear you saying mean words about your brother or sister, we're going to stop you right there and have you say something kind instead. Just an exercise that they wanted to use to change the patterns, to identify the pattern, and then to make some changes, just to develop different habits in the children.
The network factor that we've explained here helps you do two things. And we want to talk about those two things for a moment. The first thing that it helps you do is it helps you ask different questions to solve parenting problems. The second thing that it helps you to do is to look for ways that you must change first before your children will change. So we want to take both of those and look at them briefly. First of all, the network factor helps you ask different questions to solve parenting problems. Let's take this example. Bobby yells from the hall, "Mom, Kyle forgot to turn the light off in the bathroom." Kyle says, "I did not. You were the last one in there." "I wasn't. You left the light on." "No, I didn't. You did." Now, mom comes into that situation. Typically what happens is that mom wants to play Solomon and try to get to the bottom of this and find out who was at fault or so that person can go turn off the light. Or mom will say, "Bobby, you saw it. You go turn it off." And so Bobby goes to turn it off while Carl gives that little smile which says, "Gotcha." Now, if you're going to use the network factor and honor to change your family, then you're going to ask different kinds of parenting questions. One of the ones you're going to ask is, instead of asking who is at fault here, you're going to ask questions like, who's going to be the mature one? Who's going to be the servant? Who's going to be honoring? So what I might do is I might, in this situation, sit both children down in the hall and say, "Look, guys, you can get up when one of you decides to go turn off the light in the bathroom." See, parents who ask questions that find fault are asking different kinds of questions than what we're trying to ask. We're looking for honoring kinds of questions which say, who's going to be the servant? Who's going to be the mature one? Who's going to go and solve the problem, not just identify the problem? That's one example of a way that we can ask different parenting questions in the course of working with our children.
Let's take another example. If mom asks Mary to go clean up the toys in her room and Mary grumbles, rolls her eyes, huffs her voice, she goes off to her room, but it's obvious she has a bad attitude, mom may call her back and say, "You have a bad attitude here. I want you to respond with a good attitude when I give you instruction. If you can't do the job with a good attitude, then I'm going to give you more work to do until you can respond with a good attitude." Okay, what we're doing is addressing the bad attitude instead of just letting it go. If we're going to look for honor here, use the network factor, look at the patterns, we want to start asking different questions. It's not, is the job going to get done, but is the job going to get done with a good attitude?
Let me just share with you why it's so important that we ask different questions to solve parenting problems. When we ask different questions, our children learn to ask different questions about life. It's the way that we communicate to our children a different way to think about life. And a lot of times with honor, that's what it is. It's a different way to think. So a child's going to end up not hearing the way dad or mom are asking questions is going to make them ask themselves different questions as they're starting to live life and come to predicaments in life. So that child's going to say, my mom is interested in honor, or my dad is interested in a good attitude. One of the things we're trying to do is communicate to our children a different way of thinking. Jesus was doing this with his disciples. He's trying to communicate to them a different way of thinking. He had a lot of trouble sometimes getting them to think differently. It reminds us of parenting in a number of different ways. But he would say to them, you know how the leaders around here lead. They lord it over people and use their power. But in my kingdom, we do it differently. He says, if you want to be great in my kingdom, you need to learn to be the servant of all. And so Jesus is asking different questions about life in order to communicate something very different. That's what we're doing with our children. We're teaching them how to think differently just by asking different questions about parenting problems.
So first, we're going to ask different questions. Second thing we want to do as we're trying to infuse honor into the network factor is we're going to realize that as a parent, you need to change first before your children are going to change. You're thinking here about the network factor, and everything is kind of responses. You know, you act one way, and then the kids act another way, and you respond back, and it's a predictable pattern. What we want to do is start to change those patterns, and as a parent, we can change first, and that's going to cause some change in our children. Marty, age 11, comes down to breakfast with his hair combed a little different. That's all Julian, age 13, needs to start with the morning bickering. You know, they're always back and forth. As soon as he comes down, there's something, and this morning Julian says, oh, don't we look cute today? And they just start, and of course he's ready, because he knew that as soon as he got down, she was going to say something. So Marty's ready with his quick response, and they just start off as soon as they're at the breakfast table, back and forth, and it just goes back and forth for a few comments, and then one of them ends up saying, Mom, you know, and then Mom jumps in. That's her cue to come in with harshness. Well, that's Dad's cue to walk out of the room. Carla, age 8, sits at the table kind of afraid of the family dynamics, so she keeps quiet. It's a predictable pattern. It happens over and over. What we want to do is take that pattern and start changing things. What would happen if Mom walked out of the room first? What would Dad do? He'd have to respond differently, wouldn't he? Or what if Mom took Marty aside and talked to him about the network factor, talked about the pattern she sees between Marty and Jillian, and kind of partner with him, teaching him to respond differently to Jillian, maybe just let her comments go by and not respond. Partnering with him. There's different things that Mom can do to change the patterns here to affect the way they're relating in the family.
It's interesting how parents respond to each other in discipline situations. The idea of one mom or one parent walking out of the room and then another or another one walking out reminds me of the story of the mom who on Sunday morning was trying to get the three young children ready to go to church. And she sees Dad putting on his coat and she says, hey, wait a minute. Let's switch roles here. Why don't you get the kids ready and I'll go out to the car and honk the horn. Sometimes parents develop different parenting styles, and that becomes a frustration between parents because you're doing it different than I am. You've got to do it like I am because we have to be consistent in order to work with our kids. That issue we're going to talk about tonight a little bit later, because that's a network factor issue. Moms relating to the children, dads relating to the children a little differently. How do we address that issue? We'll talk about it a little bit more tonight.
One of the exciting things about the network factor is that any one person can initiate change. If one person changes, then the other person needs to change as well in response to that change. They need to do something different because you're doing something different. It's like the 5-year-old who comes in to the kitchen whining for a snack. Now, whining often works because that child gets attention. Even if it's negative attention, children often will take it. They can't tell the difference between negative and positive attention, and so they'll take that negative attention, and Mom is often frustrated enough to give it. But what would happen if Mom made a change now, and the child comes in whining, and Mom just walks out of the room and says, I don't listen to whining. Now the child is going to have to respond differently. The same pattern is not working. The child's not getting the attention they're looking for. So that child is going to have to learn a more honoring way to respond to get mom. Now that's not the only solution to whining. That's not always the answer. But in this illustration, what it does is it changes the pattern. It changes the network factor enough that the child has to change as well. Because we've talked about two principles now that deal with the network factor and honor. What we want to do now is get real practical and give you a four-step plan to help you make some changes in the network factor in your family.
The first step is to identify the patterns. As you use this peace model to look at all the relationships, you're going to find several things in your family. Arguing, competing, put-downs can become normal behavior, and children respond that way without even thinking. They become habits in the relationship. Whining and complaining are manipulative techniques for getting a yes answer. A bad attitude communicates passive resistance whenever you say no. Inappropriate teasing can cross the line of healthy fun. The second thing we want to do is we want to look for honoring solutions. We've given you a definition of honor, which is covers a lot of the dimensions of honor in family life. Treating people special, doing more than what's expected, and having a good attitude. So if Billy is mean to Sue, meanness violates the honor definition. Which part? Probably the first part, treating people special. Billy is being mean to Sue. Now, what I want to do is I want to look at that relationship, and I can see that Billy's being mean to Sue, and Billy's doing the wrong thing. What am I going to do about that meanness? I want to teach Billy how to respond to Sue in a different way. I want to pull him out of that situation every time that I see him being mean, and I want to correct him, but I don't just want to do correction. I also want to be proactive with him, and I want him to look for ways that he can be honoring. So every night at 5 o'clock, you know, the most difficult time in family life is the hour before dinner. But if I can take Billy at 5 o'clock every day and say, Billy, your assignment before you can do anything else is I want you to find one way that you can be honoring to someone else in the family, a secret act of kindness or something special for the family, whatever it might be, and I want you to tell me what it is and I want you to do it and report back. What I'm trying to do is teach Billy how to respond to others without meanness. I'm trying to change the way Billy relates to other people by infusing honor into Billy's life by doing some exercises. But what about Sue? Sue is a victim of Billy's meanness. She needs to learn how to respond to someone who's mean. And so I want to teach her an honoring response to Billy. What is an honoring response? Well, we want Sue to learn how to respond to Bill with honor, not resentment. And so I want to be watching Sue, first of all, to make sure she's not developing resentment in her heart, because that's a dangerous thing. And anybody who's in a pressure situation where somebody's being mean can be tempted to develop resentment. So I want to be working with Sue to help her respond to Billy in a helpful way. I want her to set boundaries so that when Billy's angry at Sue or being mean to Sue, Sue needs to say, Billy, you're being mean. Make the observation. That's all I want you to do, Sue. I want you to make the observation, and if Billy doesn't respond, I want you to come to me. I'm teaching Sue how to respond to meanness in a healthy way instead of getting involved in it. Unfortunately, Sue often will choose to engage with Billy, and the two of them will go back and forth, being mean to each other. I want to pull Sue out of there and teach her how to respond to Billy's meanness so that we have a more healthy interaction. So Dad gets involved with Sue, gets involved with Billy, and tries to break up this meanness and infuse honor into that relationship.
So the first step is to identify the patterns that are dishonoring, either in individuals or in the family. And secondly, we want to choose a more honoring response. Ask yourself the question, well, what do I want to do instead? Or what do I want to see my child do instead? And that's what we're looking for here in the second step. We're looking for something that they can do that's honoring to replace that dishonoring pattern. This is where we're not just criticizing the unhelpful behavior, but we're coming up with a positive solution. What do we want them to do instead? That's what we do in the second step.
A child who huffs or rolls the eyes when they're given an instruction is engaging in dishonoring behavior. And so we want to treat them with, we want to give them a more honoring response. We want to give them an honor-based solution. And that solution is to maybe say, okay, mom, or okay, dad. And that may sound simple, but it's an exercise that we're going to work with them on regularly until they can learn that, so they can develop that pattern of relating in a more honoring way.
So the first step is to identify the patterns. The second step is to choose a more honoring response. And now for the third step, we want to start working with our kids and share this plan with the family.
We share this information with children in a parent-child evaluation meeting. There are several things that make a parent-child evaluation meeting successful. The first thing is that you announce the meeting in advance. Carl, at 7 o'clock, your mom and I are going to meet with you and we're going to talk about some stuff. And Carl, who's 7 years old, says, okay, couldn't we just talk now? No, we're going to wait till 7 o'clock. Now, what this does is it raises the felt level of importance of this issue, this meeting with the child. We're not having it on the way out to the car. We're not having it in passing. We're not even having it at a discipline time. But we're setting an appointment with our child at a certain time to get together and have this discussion. This is especially helpful when you're working with teenagers. To announce in advance and even give the topic, we want to talk about some of the way that you've been talking to us. We're going to talk about that after dinner tonight. That allows the child to prepare for the meeting emotionally and to think about it and come prepared instead of it being ambushed in that situation. So one, set the time in advance. We had one family that told us they had young children. They got dressed up for that meeting just to make it special and a fun time. Great idea. The second thing that will make a parent-child evaluation meeting successful is to meet with children individually. Now, you might meet with all your children, but meet with them alone, because children have an amazing way of hiding behind each other or diffusing the issue when there's more than one of them involved in a situation. So meet with them individually. It's good to meet with them all. In fact, you might say, 7 o'clock, we're going to meet with you, 7:10 with you, and 7:20 with you, and we'll just go right around, and so everybody gets their meeting. We had some trouble with Josh when he was younger. He helped us write a lot of our material on anger and attention deficit disorder and so on. And we had parent-child evaluation meetings with him. Now he's a very delightful guy and is a lot of fun to be with. But we would say his meeting's at 7 o'clock, and then the kids will say, well, what about us? Don't we get a meeting? Okay, so 7:10, we'd bring him in and say, we just want to tell you how much we really like you and how fun it is to, you know, we just have a fun time with everybody. And so parent-child evaluation meetings become fun things that we do regularly. A third thing you want to do in a parent-child evaluation meeting is start it out positively by talking about at least three things that you appreciate about your child. I really like the way that you have been responsible with your tasks in caring for the dog lately. I haven't had to remind you, you've been doing it. That's great. The Girl Scout leader told me that you were very helpful in cleaning up afterward last time. That was very encouraging for me to hear that. And I've noticed you've been more diligent with your homework lately and getting things done. Remember, I was harping at you at the beginning of the year, but now things seem to be going much better. I really like that. So at least three things that are very positive. And then fourthly, you want to introduce the issue at hand in a positive way. But there's one thing that I see here that is going to hinder your success, and I want to talk about that. Whenever I give you an instruction, I find that you've been arguing with me, and I see that to be a problem. And we had talked last week about envisioning a positive future. We want to bring that material of envisioning a positive future here to say, you know, in order for you to be successful, you need to learn how to respond when someone gives you an instruction without arguing. It's a valuable thing you're going to need when you get into upper school, into college, when you are an employee. If you're going to be a good employee, a good student, you need to learn how to accept instruction. So I'm envisioning a positive future with them. And I may then say to them, okay, so we're going to work on this, and let's get back together in a couple of days, and we'll evaluate it again.
Now, just bringing the issue up in this formal way can be enough for a child to start making some changes on their own. You're bringing it out into the open, you're talking about it, and the child is ready to make those changes. More often than not, though, you're going to have to help the child and coach them along to change the habits of relating that they've developed. You may just be able to make observations, though, when you see, remember, this is what I'm talking about. We had that meeting last night. This is what I'm seeing. This is what I'd like you to be working on. Just pointing it out through the day so they can see it. Sometimes, though, you also may need some motivation system to help them to change, to motivate them some change, some positive rewards, some consequences if they're not responding. Now, those motivations, the positive and negative, you may reveal in the first meeting, or you may wait till a second meeting when it's clear that you're going to need them. But you're going to want to meet with the child on a regular basis for a while and continue to talk about this issue, how they're doing. Are they making some improvement? Are you seeing them improve? Are they still struggling with it? You're teaming up, though. You're partnering with the child, helping them to make these changes. And your whole attitude is that you're coaching them along because you want them to be successful in this area.
Children may not respond positively to these meetings at first. Don't let that deter you. This is a primary way to introduce new material into family life. It's an excellent way to do it. The fourth step is to reinforce change. Children must learn to change, and we're going to help them do that, even when they think they can't or don't want to. Even the process is communicating a valuable thing about life, that you can change. Some adults have grown up with the belief that they can't change. They're stuck with the way they are in some of their habits. No, we can all make changes, and we're going to help children learn that valuable lesson at a young age.
So we want to continue to evaluate the network factor over time, and you're going to make some changes. You'll see the honoring behavior develop. You want to praise your children for that, and continue to evaluate those relationships. Maybe some things you're working on now, you'll see some improvement, and then later on down the road, it'll be time to make changes in other areas. So you want to continue to think about this network factor, the different relationships may be changing. But you want to notice the honoring behavior that you're seeing, praise children for it, reinforce it, and help them to see long-term that the things that we're learning in the family now are going to help you to be successful in relationships as you get older. The honoring behavior that you're learning now is really teaching you to be a more honoring person that's going to help you on the job, in school, with friends. It's going to be a lifelong skill that you're learning, and that's why we're working on it.
One of the issues that becomes readily apparent as we start addressing the network factors that mom and dad tend to relate differently to their children. This becomes a source of tension often between mom and dad because they're disappointed in the other person that they're not doing it my way. We find, though, that although it's good for parents to agree on family rules, for example, it's not necessary for them to always parent in the same way. After all, mom's a mom and dad's a dad, and they do it differently. One mom said, I tend to do a little bit of all of the parenting tasks because I'm with the children most of the time. Whereas dad, he only has a limited few. He gets to be the playmate, or he gets to, but often when he steps in to take action, he can get action more quickly. So they'll relate differently. Now, this can be an asset, not a disadvantage in your family. So what happens is that children will learn some valuable things from dad in the way that dad relates to children, and they'll learn valuable things from mom in the way mom relates to children. And so we want to use them to our advantage as we work with our children.
Even as we think back in the families that grew up with, I'm sure we all realize that mom was different than dad. They parented differently, and that was okay. We learned different things from dad than we learned from mom. And the same is true of our children, that we don't have to parent exactly the same. There are benefits to the way dad does his kind of stuff, and there's benefits for what mom does. And it's okay that it's different. It's a good thing that it's different, because children can learn different things from each one. And so they can take the good from dad and take the good from mom and grow and learn how to relate to different kinds of people in life. So it's really a benefit. We don't want to say there's only one way to parent and, you know, if you're doing it the right way, that he's got to straight out do it your way. But it's okay. The different parenting styles are all right, and you need to allow for that in the family.
One rule that makes this work is that the parent who starts finishes. If dad starts working with a child and mom starts jumping in and taking over, then we've created a problem in the relationship. a problem that exists between dad and Bill, mom jumps in and takes over. So we really need for, if dad starts the discipline, he should finish it. Mom might help coach in the process, but Billy needs to go back to dad to deal with it. If mom starts the discipline, dad needs to let mom finish it. So the person who starts finishes it. A second principle that's very valuable here is that we want to watch out for triangles. Triangles are dangerous, so we have to be careful. Here's dad working with Billy, and he's having a problem with Billy, and so now their relationship develops some conflict. What mom does, because she wants to help, is she gets into a triangle with Billy and dad to solve the problem. So now Billy doesn't go to dad anymore. Billy goes to mom. Mom then goes to dad. Dad gives the answer back to mom, who gives it back to Billy. And so now dad and Billy don't have to relate because mom's an integral part of their relationship. That's a triangle. It's a dangerous triangle and one that we want to avoid in family relationships.
If, as a parent, you're going to get triangled in, what you want to do is go in as a counselor, not a critic. You want to be able to help that child deal with the other parent. If the child is coming to mom and saying, I don't like what dad's doing, they're complaining about dad's discipline or dad's instruction, what mom wants to do is help the child know how to go back and talk to dad. This is what dad is looking for. This is what dad needs from you. Equip the child to go back and talk to dad and work it out with dad. And the same thing is true if mom is a problem, child's having a problem with mom, and so the child goes to dad and says, you know, whatever, I want something different, then dad can equip that child to go back to mom. This is what your mom's looking for. And so we can help our children even to deal with difficult situations, difficult people maybe even, we can equip them to know how to respond in those situations, but we don't want to get in the middle. We want to counsel them, but not be the critic, not say, yeah, you know, you're right, he's wrong, but send him back and help that child know how to respond to the other parent in a way that's helpful. Now, another thing that children do sometimes is if you say no to your child, they're asking permission for something, you say no, the child may go to the other parent then and ask again. They want to try for another answer. That's another way that triangles can happen, is that children try and work one parent against the other. And so it's helpful to have rules in the family that avoid those kind of triangles because they can be dangerous. Now, one rule that is helpful is to say that the first no counts. If you get a no from mom, it doesn't matter what dad says because the first no counts. Another problem that often happens in a family is that one parent will give the child an instruction, and then another parent, not knowing that, will come in and give a second instruction. That's another triangle that may happen there. What is a child supposed to do? Now they've got two conflicting instructions. What are they supposed to do? We say in that situation that the child needs to tell the second parent, Dad just asked me to go clean my room. You know, mom's saying you need to take a bath. Dad's saying clean your room. What's the child going to do? We say the second parent gets to choose. Okay, so if dad says you need to clean up your room, mom says I want you to take a bath, then the child says to mom, well, but dad just asked me to clean the room, and then mom gets to choose, okay, go ahead, do whatever, or goes back and talks to mom or whatever. But we've set up rules here so children know what's acceptable and what's not, and we don't get stuck in triangles in the family.
Triangles can be dangerous, but they can also be very helpful. As you create your network factor on paper, you may find by drawing this squiggly line over between a relationship that relationship represents conflict between those two people. You can be the person to go in and help in that conflicting relationship by counseling, as Joanne said, counseling either one of the people or both of them together on how to relate more effectively. If you've got a problem between two siblings, you want to teach them how to relate in a more honoring way. Triangles are a very helpful way to look at this network factor, both to see the risks and the dangers involved, and also ways that you can jump in and be helpful.
If you're going to get involved in a triangle in relationship in the family, you want to use it in a way to teach the children how to relate to each other, teach the child how to relate to the parent. You want to use it in a way that they learn something about the relationship, but not get stuck that they're relating through you, because that will just weaken that other relationship. We want to equip our children to go back into the relationship and to be successful.
This is a tool that we use in counseling but it's a tool that every family, every parent can use in their own relationships in the family to draw out the facts. Once you know what the information is, when you brought it out from behind the scenes, out in the front, you can look at it and say, we have a problem here. Let's try to figure this out. It may take some time just to write out and take notes over a couple of days so that you fully understand it. Then you look for honor-based solutions to help make the changes. Then you have a parent-child evaluation meeting to present it in a positive way to your child. And then you just reinforce change. And you start in just one place. Just pick a place. You start developing honor in your family, and you will see it start to develop and permeate the whole family. And then when these relationships within the family become very strong, because honor permeates the family dynamic, then when dishonor starts to come in from the outside by a friend or someone else, one of the children starts to bring it in, it's repelled because the honor strands are so strong. We believe that the network factor can be an excellent tool for you to use in your family. Part of it's helpful because it only takes one, and maybe you're the person who's going to help infuse honor into your family.
This concludes this session. We trust that you have benefited from the Ministry of Effective Parenting. If you would like information about other resources available through Effective Parenting, just call area code 609-771-8002, or you can call toll-free 1-800-771-8334. Thank you very much for joining us for this session, and may God richly bless you and your family.